Hello and welcome to this episode of Triggered and True, featuring renowned emotional health consultant, Laura Dunkett. Thank you for being here and thank you for investing the time to learn how to take care of your soul. If this podcast sparks any questions, feel free to submit a question by going to triggeredandtrue.com, scrolling to the bottom of the page and clicking ask. If you would like to learn more about Laura Dunkett, we encourage you to follow Laura on Instagram and Facebook. Also, a great resource for you to consider is the Compassion Method Master Course. This course is a deep dive into Laura's life work, the Compassion Method. The Compassion Method is a process that empowers you to learn to see and comfort your internal pain and to discover your true self, that beautiful, wonderful part of you that has been there all along, but has simply been covered up. To obtain the Master Course, go to compassionmethod.net, and as a podcast listener, you qualify for a $50 discount that can be obtained by typing in the coupon code podcast50. Again, that's compassionmethod.net, coupon code podcast50. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome everybody to this episode of Triggered and True. Laura, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Brian?
I'm good. For those watching on YouTube, Laura is in a new setting today, so we're excited about that. There was work being done at her office, so she is doing this from home.
Yeah. Yeah. My Wi-Fi here, I think it's going to work. Sometimes yeah. I have Wi-Fi issues at my office.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the last time we tried to record. We had to make some changes there. So, well, this is a very exciting episode that we have today because it is probably long overdue, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, we've touched on it a little bit. But like, I think, didn't we do one faith one? But this is a lot more in depth and has a lot more connected to it.
Yeah, yeah. So it's been something that's been requested by people. And So we're going to be talking today about the compassion method in the context of the Christian faith, and maybe specifically how the compassion method can help one live their Christian faith, but then also for someone that maybe isn't a Christian, just to help you better understand a little bit of some of the things we've talked about on the podcast as we've gone, just a little bit of where some of the genesis for the compassion method came from. So, So Laura, why don't you just start off by giving us just a kind of a brief overview of your faith journey and kind of what you believe.
Yeah. So, big story, being raised in a Christian home, mostly, you know, traditional with a little bit of charismatic in there, wanting to, you know, especially after, when I turned 18, I definitely was like, I really want my whole life to be centered around God. And so I started kind of going down that journey, and I had had some like typical teenage moments where I hadn't made the best choices. So now I was like, all right, I want to like, you know, recommit to my faith. And what I believed was if you recommit to your faith, then you have really good behavior. That's what it mostly centered around. So when I read the Bible, I would read the Bible based on kind of a to-do list of what I should do or what I shouldn't do. And I was pretty good at being good until I wasn't. So most of the time.
Wait, Laura, you have a bad streak? No.
No way, I have a bad streak.
Wait a second. This is new information for me.
Well, the thing about it was, I'd be like,
what did you do wrong? Like you jaywalked?
Yeah, that I jaywalked. Yeah. No, but what would happen would be that like I would do really well. I'd do all the right things. I would have the right behavior. I would do all the things that I felt like I was supposed to be doing. But then periodically, it wouldn't happen every day by any means, but maybe every, you know, 3 to 6 months, I'd have a moment.
You made a mistake every 3 to 6 months. Yeah, okay.
Probably every 3 to 6 months.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm stealing your thunder. Okay. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
You were reading the Bible as a to-do list, and every 3 to 6 months, you made a mistake. Okay.
I made more mistakes than that, but I would make the mistakes that would give me the hopeless feeling of no matter how hard I try to do the right thing, and no matter how good at it I get, and all the things I say no to, at the end of the day, I can't be perfect 100% of the time. And that was both a hopeless feeling, but it also kind of started leading into maybe there's a better way to do this. Mm-hmm. Even though I didn't know exactly what that would look like or what that would be, being able to actually have faith without shame was ultimately where the compassion method led me in my spiritual journey.
Yeah.
And one of the big things, and I think I shared this in the last faith episode, or I've shared it other times, one of the things that started the whole compassion method was God actually speaking to me and saying, I want you to stop medicating with me. Mm. And it was so offensive to me because I've been doing all the right things. I went through my husband dying. I didn't get bitter. I still had faith. I still prayed for people to be healed. I still believed that God was good. And then he's saying, but you're medicating with me. And so it was so frustrating. It was kind of the same thing of doing everything right. And then him being like, you're medicating with me. And I didn't really understand what that meant either. Cause I was like, but I'm praying and I'm worshiping and I'm going to church and I'm doing all the things. Why would that be medicating with you? And so it took me about 5 days to actually listen because I was arguing for 5 days. And finally he was just like, you keep going to me with all of your pain, but you don't allow me to be with you in your pain. You're not willing to feel your pain. You mm-hmm. just want me to take it away without actually being with you in the process. And even on a neurological level, when you worship and you pray, it releases endorphins into your system and you feel all better. Mm. But it's really was a suppression of my pain because every time I went to God, I felt better, but I never actually acknowledged my pain.
That's really deep. And one of the things that jumped out to me was what you said about he can't be with you in your pain if you won't let yourself feel the pain.
Yes. And that's what he was saying. He's yeah. always been with me, and I knew he'd been with me because we had a real connection, a real relationship, but I would not go towards my pain and I would not allow him to go towards my pain because pain actually felt like almost like sin to me. You know, like it felt like when you're in pain, that means you don't believe enough. If you're in pain, that means that you don't know God well enough. If you knew God well enough, you wouldn't feel pain. So it almost felt like a sin or like wrong or bad to feel pain.
Or a lack of faith.
Yep, exactly. If I really knew the God of the universe, I would never feel pain.
Hmm.
But unfortunately, we live on an earth that there is pain. We experience pain on this earth. But instead of actually acknowledging that and acknowledging it, not just from there's pain and we need to fix it, like we need to fix mistakes in our lives, but actually seeing the pain and acknowledging that it's actually precious to feel pain, especially when you invite God into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jesus is known of a man of sorrows.
Yeah.
So,
and he really, really is comfortable with pain.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I said, like it feels like he didn't want to be around my pain because it was wrong and like sin, and God doesn't like sin. So he wouldn't want to be around my pain. And he's definitely, because it's intimacy.
Yeah.
If I feel my pain and I invite him into feeling my pain, I invite him in to most vulnerable, intimate parts of my heart that religion will not allow you to access. Therefore, you can't connect with God through religion.
Right. Well, this kind of what you're saying is really along the lines of what I've heard you say before, that before the compassion method, there was a gap between what the Bible said and then trying to do it. So
exactly.
you're really hitting on that right here.
Yep. And then, yeah, definitely. Like, again, like I said, I was pretty good at being good, but I couldn't be perfect. So it always bumped back in up against my humanity, which also included my pain.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the medication part there, because when people hear that, I mean, that could, to a religious or a spiritual person, that could be a little bit offensive. Like,
no, it sure is.
You know, what do you mean my worship could just be me medicating?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the medication part of that and as a protector.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what you're doing. You're actually using the worship instead of going and let yourself feeling the pain.
Yeah.
You're engaging in religious activity, which isn't a lot different. It's different, but to your heart, it's not all that different than going for a run or for even doing something harsher, you know, alcohol or drugs.
No, exactly. No, it is. It's a medication.
It's
actually And a neurological level, it's completely a medication because, again, it releases that serotonin, it releases those endorphins, and we literally feel, I'm fine, I'm fine. And that's why people go to church ready to kill each other.
Yeah.
And they get into worship, or they worship, and they're like, all better. But they never actually dealt with why they wanted to kill each other before the church service. They just covered it up with worship, and everything's okay now.
So we're in no way saying that that is wrong to worship, but what God was speaking to you was, you know, if you actually want to, you're not actually connecting with me in that process either.
No, yeah. I might be worshiping him, but I'm not connected to myself. So there's not a communion happening because it's a one-sided relationship.
Yeah.
Because if I'm not willing to face my pain and I just worship him, but my worship doesn't come from the deep places of my heart, whether that be joy or pain, then we're not actually having relationship.
Right. You know, I read a really great verse that I think actually ties to what you're saying. So let me read this with, read this once. I think it ties in. Got a frog in my throat.
Aww.
All right. So I was reading this in the Message Bible the other day. It's from 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 11 through 13. Paul says in the Message translation, Dear Corinthians, I can't tell you how much I long for you to enter this wide open, spacious life. We didn't fence you in. The smallness you feel comes from within you. Yeah. Your lives aren't small, but you're living them in a small way. I'm speaking as plainly as I can with great affection. Open up your lives, live openly and expansively. To me, what you were describing is that your pain had fenced you in.
Exactly.
You were, and we see this all the time. People's pain prevents them from living
exactly the life. And I love God how it says you're small. Yeah, because in the compassion method, you are small. So that's the thing that happens when I medicate and I don't feel my pain, I become very small. And in that smallness, that's how I see God. And that's actually how I live my life. When we live our lives based on the knowledge of good and evil, we live a life that is very small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so much of the compassion method is about opening up. And we're going to open ourselves up and be vulnerable.
Yeah.
But it's about opening up our lives to the potential.
Exactly.
That's our true self.
It's amazing. The fruit I see, even though that's not necessarily the reason why I help people connect to themselves, it's for them first. But the byproduct is your faith expands, not just faith in God, which is definitely a primary faith that does expand, but your faith in yourself, your faith in your finances, your faith in your abilities. All those things start to expand as you start to recognize you're made in his image and you start to recognize who you are and you're no longer medicating, but rather facing your pain and allowing the love of God, because that's ultimately compassion and love of God, to come in and be with us in our darkest places. And our darkest places, I actually don't believe are sinful places. I believe our darkest places are the darkest places of pain that we still have trapped within us, that we haven't been able to face yet.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. Your darkest places aren't sin. So, you know, in faith circles, in theology, there's kind of different camps. One camp is we're inherently sinful, we're fallen, we're all these different things. Another camp is, no, we've been redeemed, we've been set back. Mm-hmm. Our mind hasn't quite caught up with that yet.
Exactly.
Especially because we're
trapped in certain parts of our brain because of pain and childhood.
Right. So why do we sin? Is it because we're inherently evil beings? Or is it because we haven't stewarded our hearts well? We have pain inside.
Exactly.
That
because
causes us to act contrary. We, in our pain, we act contrary to who we are, which is what we talk about with the trigger.
Yep, exactly.
Our triggered self is not who we are, right?
No, even though we all, every single human triggers, even Jesus, every single human triggers, but it's not because of the sin that is a fruit of it. It's because they actually feel pain. You know, even when you think back to Adam and Eve,
And obviously, just because you trigger doesn't mean it's sin.
Exactly. Right. And yeah. Jesus did not sin, but he did trigger. And so he had a neurological process that caused him to go into his amygdala to some capacity that he had a reaction and a trigger. And he talks about it a little bit, you know, like just the, because he's connecting with our humanity because he became man, he became a human.
He had to feel what we felt, right?
To feel every single thing we did. And so there's no, some people will argue the point and say, oh, he wasn't triggered. I'm like, it's impossible. If he was a human with a brain, he triggered. Mm-hmm. And but he never sinned with his trigger. He had the reaction without it leading to sin, because ultimately I believe he had time with God to help heal those places in his heart so that he didn't sin. I don't think it was just like willpower that he didn't sin. I think it was an overflow of obviously being God, but also he emphasizes over and over again his time with God.
Yeah.
And his time with God, I believe, was a place of nurturing his humanity, even though he was God, being with him, loving him, teaching him, protecting him, being with him.
Yeah. And that's a lot for someone to chew on, but I mean, it definitely, and I really appreciated ministry school on that aspect. I mean, we talked a lot about our identity, because I probably was of a camp a little bit more of like, I'm just a worthless, you know, whatever, you know, and shame. So really what it was is you're stuck in shame.
Yeah.
So but unfortunately, church sometimes traffics in shame.
It definitely does. After you start being aware of shame, you're like, oh my goodness. You was like kind of like seeing well, everywhere even, because.
Well, really, I see it in my parenting. I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure. But one thing, because you've mentioned in the past that one of the gifts that you didn't receive as much that sometimes you kind of go back to is not feeling like you're enough or not feeling like you're good enough.
Yep.
And I find that people actually kind of medicate with the worthlessness of their humanity. And I'm, you know, people say like that one, like all our righteousness is filthy rags and I'm worthless. And there's a bunch of scriptures that are like really like scum of the earth kind of scriptures, you know?
Yeah.
And people actually like gravitate towards them and say them almost with affection. And I always thought that was weird because that wasn't my lack and that wasn't my trigger. I would be like, why are they so happy to be so worthless? But it's because it actually reinforces my lack of not being enough. And it feels like it gives validation to not being enough, because how they describe our righteousness or self-righteousness is it feels like the same feeling of not enough.
Right. Yeah.
And when you know you're enough, you don't gravitate towards those. It doesn't mean that you become self-righteous, but you're actually able to receive the righteousness of God, because that's when you think of, unless you become like a little child, you can't enter the kingdom of God. And the kingdom of God is righteousness, joy, and peace.
Mm-hmm.
So to actually have true righteousness, it's not doing good things. It's actually knowing who we were created to be that allows us to receive the righteousness of God.
Well, and for me, it's along the lines of what you're saying. One of the things that I always struggled with was, especially with Christians, because when I first started taking my faith seriously, I thought Christianity just by itself solved all the world's problems.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Me too.
Well, in some ways it does, because it solved the sin problem, right?
Yeah.
But just having faith without actually doing this heart work, which to me connects to the Bible, Proverbs 4:23 is one thing I talk about a lot when I talk to people about the compassion method, because it says, above all else, guard your heart.
Yeah.
For it is the wellspring of life. Like all of your life comes through your heart.
It does. And
the compassion method for me personally is like a very practical way to do Proverbs 4:23.
Yep, exactly.
So it helps me make my faith effectual, I guess, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
but it also helped me really make sense of the world, because I would be so confused when I would see a pastor sin or a pastor.
Yeah.
And now I recognize his heart's just not taken care of.
Yep, exactly.
People are hurting each other because they hurt. People are doing dumb things because they hurt.
Exactly.
And they have pain they haven't taken care of.
And I think
needs one of the things
that actually sets people of faith up for failure, as far as maybe a pastor or just any Christian, is the fact that we think that spirituality alone will actually allow us to make good choices all the time.
Well, worship alone,
exactly,
by itself, no, it's going to make exactly. It's going to fix all of our problems.
Exactly. No, and not. No, we actually need to tend to our hearts as well as to our spirits. Of course, it's mind, body, spirit, our mind being both our logical brain and our heart brain, and being able to recognize that if those are not taken care of, even if we're the most spiritual person, and you know, speaking of Bethel, they have you read a book called God's Generals. And it's about all these different people that did amazing things for God. They were anointed and they healed and they preached and they did all these amazing things, but almost every single one of them had moral failure because they were so focused on the spiritual realm. They didn't tend to their hearts. And what happens when that we feel the medication of spirituality, the purity of spirituality, that I can do no wrong, I'm anointed. But the back door that causes, I believe, moral failure and sin is the negligence of the heart that makes room for us to make decisions that are contrary to who we are in God.
I think this connects really well to a quote that I heard you say. I love sometimes I read these quotes back to Laura and she'd be like, that's like, really wow. Good. Where'd you get that from? I'm like, you said it. It's yeah. In my notes. So this is one I had in my notes that you had said. You said, our triggered self cannot grow spiritually. Our true self is not a fully developed person and is growing. Our true self remains stuck when we cannot comfort a trigger.
Yeah.
So what you're talking about right now is people that have a trigger, people that have pain,
Yeah. They're
stuck developmentally.
Yeah,
they can't exactly. grow spiritually.
Mm-mm.
And what we're trying to do is comfort that trigger, comfort the pain behind that trigger.
Yeah.
And it will help you grow.
Yep, exactly. And when we comfort that trigger, again, it invites God into that pain as well. And then that allows us to reconnect with our true self. And also, I believe our true self is directly connected to our spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing you said is that to know yourself is to love yourself. So you said to truly know God, we have to know us first. And he's living in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's the same power that raised you from that lives inside of us. But yes. When we're stuck in a trigger, we're not able to see that, believe it, connect with it.
So if we can't connect to ourself, he's mm-hmm. in there, you're saying.
Always. He said he'd never leave us and he'd never forsake us. But if we leave ourselves, he stays with ourselves and like, we leave.
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of picture him kind of like in the story of the prodigal son, how the father's sitting on the porch.
Mm-hmm.
And the son's returning and he's like, I can just picture him like sitting on the seat of my heart, like just tapping his foot, just patiently waiting there.
Hey, I'm here waiting to connect right here. With
whenever you want
to
come back and you be with you, guess what? Mm-hmm. You're automatically with me at the same time.
Exactly. I love that. I love that. Even if we get triggered, causes a reaction, causes us naturally to push away, that he's always there waiting for us to come home to ourselves. And that's why when I say, when we come home to our true selves, when we come home, it's such a homecoming because it is that prodigal son returning both to who God created him to be and to God because God is with us.
Yeah.
And I love that he doesn't, he's always with us, but I love that he's not impressed or chasing our triggers. He stays with us. And that was part of the religious part that was so hard for me because I felt like when I trigger, I'm sinning. So God removes himself from me because he doesn't want to be around my triggered self. But it's actually quite the opposite. He's actually staying with who I really am. And I'm reacting over here. And he's like, I'm right here with you. And then as soon as I turn my affections back to myself and stop blaming the trigger, and I turn my affections back to myself, I'm right there with him again.
We talked about this when we talked about shame, like in the garden when Adam and mm-hmm. Eve sinned.
Yeah.
Who drove them into the bushes?
Mm-hmm.
Shame drove them into the bushes.
Yes.
God didn't remove. God came to be with them again.
He knew
what happened. It's not like he didn't know. You know, he knew what happened and he still came to be with him. He
exactly.
Yeah. So
I always say, even though this is a, you know, it's obviously not what happened in the Bible, but I always think if he saw us for what we did, not for who we are, he never would have come to Adam and Eve directly. He would have sent an angel on his behalf to kick him out of the garden because he wouldn't want to be with us because he saw us for what we did. But because he didn't see us, he saw what we did. But because he didn't see us for who, what we did, he saw us for who we are, he could come and be with us even though we sinned.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of Christians are very scared of sin.
Mm-hmm.
So just talk a little bit about the impact that that has.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that happens when we're scared of sin. So if pain leads us to sin, because that's how I believe it works, that we don't just wake up one morning and go, oh, I just want to go sin. We hurt. We feel alone. We feel scared. We feel trapped. And we react. And then in our reaction is usually where we sin. But what I think about being afraid of sin is actually being afraid of our triggers.
Mm.
We're so scared of doing the wrong thing. We're so scared of reacting in the wrong way that we reject ourselves because we're rejecting ourselves because we believe that we are sinful, that we're wrong, that we're evil, that we're bad.
Well, that's what I was just thinking. We think that sin is who we are.
Exactly.
Or whatever particular thing we're doing, like.
Exactly. We think it's our identity and that's who we are. And we have to stop doing that to actually come back to ourselves. Where in fact, we're always who God created us to be. Colossians 1:20 says, the blood of Jesus has restored us back to himself. We're restored back to him. We just trigger and react and make mistakes, usually in our reactions. And our avoidance of sin is usually avoidance of the wound that causes to trigger.
Hmm. Yeah. So in a way that avoiding pain kind of falls into that sin connects back to our pain. And
exactly. And so when most people, whether we are aware of it or not, we do see triggers as sin and we see pain as sin.
Yeah. And sometimes it is. Sometimes the trigger is sin. But
no, definitely. Yeah, oh, no, yeah, definitely. Right, yeah. Like that's why one of my quotes is what you do matters. You matter more.
Yep.
Sin matters. Making mistakes matters. There's consequences for it. It's not God's design for us. And it matters a lot.
Well, that's, and I think, you know, the people that could be very scared of sin, when we start saying things like this, like, oh, you're condoning sin. And the reality is that what we do can have enormous consequences, but still doesn't mean it's who we are.
Exactly. And it also doesn't mean we're not deserving through the blood of Jesus, not deserving of love. That's right. One of the saddest things about it is that we believe that sin separates us from God.
Mm-hmm.
But God is a holy God that won't be connected to our sin, but he can still be connected to us. That's why he says, when you were still in sin, I died for you.
Yeah. He didn't wait.
Because I knew who you were. I didn't wait till you got better to be with you. So we get to be loved, whether we do right or wrong. I remember, my husband, Jeff, before he passed away, he wrote a letter to each of the kids. And one of my daughters has always had more challenges in her behavior and her triggers. And he told her, I said, I want you to know that I'm proud of you when you make mistakes. And I'm proud of you. He said, I'm proud of you when you make bad choices. And I'm proud of you when you make good choices, because I'm always proud of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And when he wrote that 13, 14 years ago before the Compassion Method, I actually didn't like it. I was like, I don't think you should be proud of her when she's making bad choices. Because if you're proud of her, you're going to enable or, you know, somewhat, you know, tell her it's okay if she makes bad choices. I didn't like it. It actually made me feel uncomfortable.
Well, it's kind of like the Bible talks about how we are the apple of his eye.
Mm-hmm.
What he's saying to your daughter is that you are the apple of my eye when you make bad choices.
Yeah.
And you're the apple of my eye when you make good choices.
Exactly. And that's
I might not be in love with what you do.
No,
I might
exactly.
not like what you're doing.
Mm-mm.
It might hurt my heart. It probably hurts my heart. It does hurt my heart if you're making bad choices. It hurts me. I don't like it for you. It's not what I want for you, but you're still the apple of my eye.
Exactly. And that is the truth that we lose sight of when we believe that when we're triggered or in sin, we're no longer loved by God. And when we do good, we're loved by God. But when we do bad, we're no longer loved by God.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you started the compassion method with having a very spiritual background, you've talked to me how there was a temptation to always like go right to God. Like mm-hmm. if somebody was across from you, you're like, let's pray, let's go right to God. But it was actually a word you felt from God himself to redirect you a little bit on that.
Yes, definitely. Because I had been in so many different modalities before I was learning the compassion method. And I really believe God already knew I would just go do what I know, what we all do. I would just go, okay, well, I'll do this process. We'll focus on shame. We'll focus on compassion. We'll do this process, but God's still going to come in. He's going to take care of everything every time. You know, like that would just be my default. But one of the things he said, until you bring a gift giver, a mom and dad to stand in the gap for what their parents were able to give you, don't bring me in there. Because I'll come in and I'll make them feel better, but I'll be a fantasy in their mind. I won't be a reality in their mind or in their hearts or in their faith.
Well, and to kind of drive this home, the way you first explained this to me is you said that God was talking to you like, don't bring me into this equation until I have been properly introduced.
Exactly. I love saying it that way. Thanks for reminding it. But yeah, when he's been properly introduced by having tangible representations, because he is intangible and he's been properly introduced by being represented by humans, then we can actually receive the reality of God.
And I think we talk a lot about in Christianity about how we are his hands and feet. We are a temple, you know, in him we live and move and have our being. Well, what we're really saying, and like a very core element of the compassion method, is that God tangibly meets these needs in people, these core emotional needs that you call the 10 gifts.
Yeah.
I think it's episodes 5 and 25, podcast episodes 5 and 25 really hit the 10 gifts.
Yep.
But these 10 developmental needs that every human being needs in early childhood development, God meets those needs in humanity through people.
Exactly. Because if we haven't experienced that, then we're only connecting with God with the fantasy of him being a perfect God that's going to love us no matter what, but not having tangible eyes look at us with unconditional love, tangible body language, hear us, someone hold us. You know, so much of the time I've heard people say, I just wish God could come down as Jesus or come down as himself in form and hug me.
And he has, and he is.
And he's done it over and over again. We just missed it.
Well, the reality is too, in our pain, we pushed it away.
Exactly.
Because like when we're hurting, we won't let people be close. Like I just noticed myself doing this the other night.
Yeah.
I was laying in bed and my wife came over to give me a hug and I was really triggered from something at work. And I was just like, I was squirming. I so did not want to be hugged. I'm like,
it's the weirdest just thing. It's like, you feel like you want to like resist. It's not even just like you don't receive it. You want to resist it.
Yeah. It's like, and I'm like, and I caught myself doing it. I'm like, why am I resisting love?
Yeah.
You know, why am I resisting? I'm hurting. And I've boxed myself in.
Yeah.
Because the reality is to let the love in, guess what else I have to do?
Feel the pain.
I got to feel the pain.
Yep.
Because I can't just have the love.
Yep. And that's why when affection comes into the trigger, into the wound that we're feeling, it actually offends us. It's like salt in the wound because we're not ready to feel the pain. So we push people away to avoid feeling the pain, like you just said.
And I think so much of the compassion method is designed to help give us eyes to see.
Yeah.
Where God was bringing those gifts into our lives.
Yeah.
Because as you teach in the modality here, that God's plan was for that to come from our biological parents, the 10 gifts.
Yep.
Seen, heard, and affection, and all these things we're talking about, protection and provision, all those things would come from our biological parents.
Yeah.
However, we live on planet Earth. No matter how good of home you had, or bad a home you had, whatever the situation, your parents were not able to give you in the fullness all of those 10 gifts.
They couldn't properly introduce you to God in every way that he wanted to be introduced to you. So he sends others real humans with real tangible experience to make God real to us.
And we have to know that in our relationship with God, in those areas that our parents couldn't provide for us.
Oh, yeah.
That's where we're going to
see that all the time. Yeah. Whenever anyone brings up their struggle with faith, it's usually always, it is always connected either to a wound they experience, or it's connected to a lack of receiving one of the gifts. You know, you hear it with like, I don't feel like God hears me. Right. Did your mommy and daddy hear you? No. No wonder you don't think God hears you. I don't feel like God really is going to protect me. Bad things are going to happen to me. He's not going to really protect me. Did your mom and dad, did they protect you? Mm-hmm. Every single time it's linked to either a wound or an unmet need when we have struggled, disillusionment, or disappointment with God.
Oh, this, I got a great quote.
Oh, good.
I'm not going to say who said it till I read it.
Okay, good. I like
then, that. Then we can guess.
Okay.
This person, this very wise person said, however we feel about God is how we felt about our mom and dad. Everything comes back to God, but our access point is affected by your lack from childhood.
That's amazing. That articulates exactly what I said so well. Can you actually say it one more time?
You said it too, by the way.
Like, that is really good.
This is your quote really from my notes. We were back when we were meeting one on one.
Yep.
If anybody just happens to be picking up that has not listened to our episodes before, because this could be an episode that somebody catches for the first time. Laura and I have a long history of meeting one on one with her, and I take meticulous notes. So, that's where this
I'm so glad that you did. Yeah. If you could read it again, because I feel like it really articulates it well.
Yep. You said, however we feel about God is how we felt about our mom and dad. Everything comes back to God, but our access point is affected by our lack from childhood.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then kind of to go right along with that, you said to one degree or another, we are all living the consequences of these needs, these 10 gifts not being given to us, or these needs not being met in our early childhood development.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's in every relationship. But yep. Because we're talking about our relationship with God, it is directly impacted by our lack. And we can pretend, you know, we can say in a non-triggered moment, oh no, God's all the 10 gifts to me. And oh no, God loves me all the time. We have the best relationship. But when it really comes down to it, when you're in a triggered state, when you have a lot of pressure put on you, when you no longer can stay in your adult brain to be able to believe these things, it's not going to feel true to you in your trigger. I see so many Christians say, oh no, God's everything to me. But as soon as they're in a triggered state, they really don't believe it anymore. And that's where a lot of, again, the disappointment and disillusionment.
And that's where the shame comes in too.
Like, exactly.
Oh, I don't have enough faith. My faith is weak. I'm triggered. I'm not believing.
Yep.
No, there's a reason you're not believing, because you've got some pain. It's blocking you from actually believing what the Bible says.
Exactly. We are naturally wired to believe God, to believe the Bible. The only reasons we stop believing is because pain and lack is causing our brains to not be able to connect to God in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think is important when we talk about the gifts, a big difference between what you do and maybe, I actually have never taken a psychology class in my life, but I've heard people talk about psychology and I've heard you talk about it. But like one of the things I've heard you talk about, like psychology, a lot of times they talk about like, when things went wrong in childhood, it's like, you just got to deal with that.
Mm-hmm,
so you're a kid that didn't get this in childhood, and you're just going to have to kind of manage that the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But the way you speak it and the way you teach it, it's not like you don't manage it. You heal it. And guess what? Mm-hmm. You can be 100%.
Yeah.
Well, let's say on earth, does anything ever get to be 100%? But you
it
can
may not
live...
be 100% on earth, but it can be a high percentage of living like that because your needs are met. And doesn't mean you won't ever get triggered again. It doesn't mean you won't ever feel emotions, but your ability to go through anything is so much greater because you are connected.
Right. You can live like that Bible verse we talked about. You can live, mm-hmm. open up your lives, live openly and expansively.
Yeah, exactly.
Your life does not have to be boxed in a corner because you had
yep.
a hideous childhood.
Yeah. And I love that. It actually, when I read the Bible through the shame lens, which would be reading the Bible through the knowledge of good and evil,
yeah.
I felt like I could never get to what you're talking about. It always actually, I would, so many times when I was done reading the Bible, I'd feel hopeless, but I tell myself, this is the Bible. You have to read it because this is what God told us to read. But I feel very hopeless after because mm-hmm. I would be like the thing, like Paul says, the thing I will to do, I don't do. And the thing I will not to do, I do. And it was so hopeless to me because it was centering around my behavior.
Yeah.
But when I actually started to have it center around who I was, all of a sudden, like when you read certain stories or you hear certain instructions, there's a joy to it. There's an excitement right. to it. There's possibility. It no longer feels impossible and hopeless. It actually feels so possible for me to do the things that are promised to us to be able to do once we were able to line up with God's love in that way.
Well, and speaking about the hope and what's possible, an absolute core tenet, and we've talked about this before, but of the compassion method is that God knew what our parents could and couldn't give us.
Yeah.
And this is stuff you've talked about. He knew what our parents couldn't give us.
Yeah.
And he sent us that in other forms.
Yeah.
Through other people, through teachers, mm-hmm. through
yeah.
neighbors, maybe our friends' parents, you know, yeah. coaches, youth leaders, different things like that. God sent those gifts in other packages.
Yeah.
And that's part of what the compassion method is, giving the eyes
hope.
To see.
Exactly. It's that's always the hope part. There because he's been with us all along the way in a tangible, practical way. And it always makes me believe even more in God and even more in God's love because I feel so well taken care of. The more gift givers I can see in my life, I can see him being with me all the way back to being a couple years old.
And as I started learning this, I realized that this wasn't hopeful in that whimsical, like just Pollyanna
yeah,
type
like,
thing where
one
I'm forcing
day we're gonna
myself.
Be okay. Yeah. Jesus like, loves us.
I'm like, no, I mean, this gift of enough came somewhere. This gift
oh, yeah.
of being protected came somewhere. And yeah.
And you know, I talk a lot about it being like customized. That's also what excites me. Like it's customized because you're a unique person and mm-hmm. I'm a unique person. And we potentially both didn't receive one of the gifts, but how your image of God and who God created you to be is going to process that is a unique way that only you're going to process your lack and your pain. So yeah. he customized sending particular people into your life that would fit mm-hmm. who you are. And I love that too, because it means we were always known and he always knew what we needed down to these little details. When people find certain gift givers, it's so custom fit that they like, I've had people cry and be like, this is what I was waiting for that I didn't realize I was waiting for because this is what I needed to experience. And when they experience it, they realize how loved they are by God because it's so perfectly fitting their need being met.
Yeah, man, I love that. You know, I actually just had an experience with this trigger that I had that was just something from work, but I was laying in bed and I couldn't sleep, or I'd fallen asleep and woken up and couldn't fall back. And I was laying there fighting, facing it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh man, I gotta let myself feel this. I can't just will myself back to sleep. That's what
no.
I'd like to do is just will myself back to sleep and just ignore it a little longer. But it's like, no, it's 2:30 AM and it's not, I can't get up yet and I need some sleep and I'm going to have to like, let myself feel this. So I let myself feel it. I worked through the process. I got to, you know, the tender part. What was I was scared and, mm-hmm. and what do I need? I was feeling unprotected. I needed to feel protected. When you talked about the gift giver coming very customized, the particular person that I chose is a person that he's a little bit edgy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little bit confrontational.
Yeah.
He definitely rubs some people the wrong way.
Yeah.
But he does not rub me the wrong way.
It's like, exactly what you need.
Because I can see how other people can sometimes get, because
that's exactly what I'm talking about.
And he's intense. Yeah. And he's intense too. But yet I've felt that feeling of protection
in his presence, you know, that tangible feeling. But you have to get little to feel it because he's my age. So I'm like, because when I'm with him, I'm like,
your peers.
I don't really.
When you're in your adult brain and you're not triggered, your peers.
He is a pretty big guy. I mean, he could protect me, you know, but I don't need it like that. You know what I'm saying?
No, you don't. But when you're a child, you need it.
But you have to get little with that. I had to I had to let myself get little with my pain.
Yep.
The bigger my trigger, the littler I know I am, the smallness that I feel, I'm really, really little. And that little, little me, man, that feeling of protection goes a long way. You know, I fell asleep.
Wow. I fell asleep. I love that.
Interestingly, two nights later, similar-ish trigger, still stuff from work. It's a little bit different. Here I am again. I'm back at it again. Go through the whole process. And what is it this time? Still protection.
Yeah.
Still scared. But this time, I needed it from a female.
Wow. Yeah.
I needed the female expression of it.
Mm-hmm.
So then I remembered another time where I felt that. And I felt that from a lady that gave me a prophetic word, actually.
Huh,
at a very, very timely time. She actually gave it to my wife, and my wife related to me.
Yeah.
But she gave a prophetic word at a very, very timely time that completely landed. Wow. And it was obvious this woman had been praying for me.
Hmm.
It was obvious.
You felt the care of it.
I felt the care of it. Like
the word was powerful, but the care of it was connected to
it. It wasn't
as
just
well.
This random thing just out of the air. Because this was also someone I was in a relationship with. So I knew. So it was like that spiritual protection that this woman prayed for me. And this woman intercedes for me. And then I felt that word, and that word landed and broke something. And I was like, fall asleep. But my gosh, both times it took me about an hour and a half
to work through it. I know.
Because you spent 45 minutes not wanting to go there.
I know, exactly.
And then
it's actually a trigger.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. You wake up and you're like, Why did I fight that for so long? Mm-hmm. You know,
but
I love how
you shared that even an edgy person can be a gift giver, and how we're so quick to reject certain types of personality, especially if they're connected to our trigger, but how certain personalities are actually exactly what we need. And that's why a lot of times if someone's having a hard time with someone, I usually say, like, let's take care of the trigger first. So you know what you really feel about this person. And many times what you just experienced, they'll be like, oh, I didn't like them because they had anger, but that very anger fought for me and I felt protected in it.
Yeah.
So you can't receive that part of it until you deal with your trigger. So I love that it doesn't always come in these perfect packages. Sometimes it comes in a person that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah. Well, before we even started, we decided we were going to do this in a couple of parts. And I think I've got a great way to kind of sum up this part right here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to read a little excerpt from a book that I read not too long ago. So I should have looked up how to say this lady's name because I'm going to kill it. But anyway, the book is called I Dared to Call Him Father by Bilquis Sheikh. Yeah. So anyway, I dared to call him father. It was written in the 1960s about a woman that was Muslim and eventually came to Christian faith. And I want to read this excerpt that she said. She said, "Oh Lord, I cried, where is your comforting spirit? And suddenly I recalled a childhood experience of walking with my father through a marketplace. Father cautioned me to stay by his side, but always active, I wanted to run off. A flower display caught my attention. I ran over to it. Suddenly, I realized that my father was not at my side. Panic filled me and I burst into tears. Oh, Father, I said, come find me and I won't ever run away from you again. Even as I spoke, Even as I spoke, there he was, his tall, slender figure coming quickly toward me through the crowd. I was with him again. All I wanted now was to stay by his side." Now she's speaking as an adult. "As I sat in the hotel room, I realized that in fact, I had left my heavenly father again. By allowing myself to become anxious, I had run off from his comforting presence. When would I learn that I cannot worry and trust God at the same time? I relaxed in my chair and felt at peace again." She doesn't fully realize it, but she just tapped into the compassion method and how cool it was that she actually felt that Maybe it was protection that she wasn't feeling. And it probably was. Yeah. It really was. She probably wasn't feeling protected because she was scared and she was in that crowd. How cool it was that actually it was her earthly father representing, properly representing in this case, the heavenly father. And she tapped into that feeling and connected it back to.
Exactly. And then she was able to have that peace come in the hotel room as an adult because she saw her dad or her gift giver be able to come in and give her that feeling. So now she can connect to God in the same way. I love that story.
She tangibly felt that. You know, and that's what that's what we're talking about with the gifts is like that protection has a tangible feeling.
Exactly.
And once you felt that, you can go back and re-feel that.
Yep.
The rest of your life. Yeah.
And you can reconnect with it and then reconnect with God. And every time we connect with a gift giver giving us what we needed, especially in early childhood development, it strengthens our relationship with God that much more.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is really great, Laura. And I really appreciate your vulnerability and sharing about your,
your
working through your process and your faith side of it. And I look forward to picking this up on the next episode and going in a little bit more depth in a couple other areas, but this is really fun. I really enjoy it.
So. Yeah. Thanks for doing that. And I'm excited. We're going to do part two next.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening and look forward to joining you on the next episode. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you again for joining us for this episode of Triggered and True. We hope that you enjoyed it. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, go to triggeredandtrue.com, scroll down to the bottom of the page and click ask. And if you would like to learn more about the Compassion Method, be sure to check out the Compassion Method Master Course, which can be purchased at compassionmethod.net. And as a podcast listener, you qualify for a $50 discount, which can be obtained by typing in the coupon code podcast50. Again, that's compassionmethod.net, coupon code podcast50. Thank you again. Goodbye.